Tishtyagatosi bhadram te. Tishtyagatosi bhadram te. Gramyan kaman abhipsase. Abhipsase. Gramyan kaman abhipsase. Udvahishyami tangs teham. Udvahishyami tangs teham.
Udvahishyami tangs teham.
Svabandhu bhirarindama.
Svabandhu bhirarindama.
Dishyagatosi bhadrante. Gramyan kaman abhipsase. Udvahishyami tangs teham.
Udvahishyami tangs teham.
Svabandhu bhirarindama.
Svabandhu bhirarindama.
Translation: O killer of the enemy, you have somehow or other come here. This is certainly great fortune for me. I wish all auspicious things for you. You have a great desire to satisfy your senses, and all my friends and I shall try our best in all respects to fill your desires. Purport: the living entity comes down into this material world for sense gratification, and his intelligence, represented by the woman, gives him the proper direction by which he can satisfy his senses to their best capacity. In actuality, however, intelligence comes from the Supersoul, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he gives full facility to the living entity who has come down to this material world. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kuru nandana bahushakha yanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. Those who are on the spiritual path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. When a devotee is advancing towards spiritual realization, his only aim is the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does not care for any other material or spiritual activity. King Puranjan represents the ordinary living entity, and the woman represents the ordinary living entity's intelligence. Combined, the living entity enjoys his material senses, and the intelligence supplies all paraphernalia for his enjoyment. As soon as he enters the human form, the living entity is entrapped by a family, tradition, nationality, customs, etc. These are all supplied by the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, the living entity, under the bodily conception of life, utilizes his intelligence to his best capacity in order to satisfy his senses. This verse is taken from the allegorical story of King Puranjan. I particularly wanted to speak on it because of some particular comments within the purport that I must have read many times, but it often happens that we read something and it's almost like reading it for the first time as we see it in a different context or it just strikes us. So that just happened to me a couple of days ago while reading this in the Veda base. This particular short section in which Srila Prabhupada writes, as soon as he, the living entity, enters the human form, the living entity is entrapped by a family, tradition, nationality, customs, etc. These are all supplied by the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this family, tradition, customs, nationality, we take that to be, it's not even questioned at any level that these are the intrinsic trappings of our very existence. It's in one sense it counters Mayavad, for those who are very philosophical. Most people don't even think about these things, because we have characteristics, whereas Mayavad is nir vishesh, no characteristics. But what are the special characteristics that makes one person different from another, or one group of people different from another, or one nationality different from another? These are family traditions, nationality, customs. And so deeply ingrained in our consciousness, and that's a saying, but we just take it as, like I say, as absolutely axiomatic that, for instance, I'm born in India, therefore I'm an Indian. And this is the way that we do things, and that is the way to do things, and to do things in any other way is just considered strange or odd or wrong. I'm born in England, and along with that comes the whole culture, way of thinking, outlook on life, values, what we consider important, but it's all supplied by Maya, because we want to forget Krishna, and Maya supplies the intelligence by which we can forget Krishna. And this comes in the form of socialization, when from the moment we're born, we're immediately cast in a role as a little child, and we're expected to live and play that part, and it goes on throughout life like this. So we take it all very seriously, but even more than taking seriously, we just, like I say, it's just so intrinsic to our being that we consider the way we behave, the way we act, our mannerisms, and everything. But it's all, if it's not in Krishna consciousness, then it's all simply supplied by Maya to help us forget Krishna. It's a trap of Maya. We feel very proud. I'm very proud because I'm British. But the thinking like that is a trap of Maya, or just the way that people relate with each other. Everything in this world is simply the supplies of Maya, by which Maya enables us to completely forget Krishna in all respects, and to accept this world, and to accept our present existence as reality, even though it's temporary, and we'll have to go to another existence, and then we'll become a frog or a dog or something like this, and we'll accept that set of the frog's way of thinking and the frog's way of doing things as being reality. But none of anything of what we do in this world is actually reality. And taking this so seriously, at the universities and colleges, there's great research done, and then the teaching of anthropology, sociology, psychology, studying the human condition with no idea whatsoever that this is all the entrapment of Maya. We think we're studying reality, but it's a shadow over reality. It's not the real thing. People don't even know they're in Maya. They just take this to be the world as it is. And they see, well, because this happened, therefore we can study the psychological effects, but they don't know that because, for instance, someone saw their mother being killed when they were 6 years old, and therefore they have deeply ingrained psychological trauma which makes them lose their temper and beat everyone around them every so often. In one sense, it may be true, but in another sense, it's all simply paraphernalia provided by Maya so that we can forget Krishna. But materialistic people, they don't want to hear this. If to them, even to talk about Maya, to them it's an absurd theory. Because they're so much fixed in the idea that this is reality. Even though whatever they consider to be reality, their consciousness, their present moorings within it, their present matrix, their present body and everything that comes with it, is just kshanik, temporary, lasts for a moment, that's all. But they're very busy studying history and economics and all these things with the idea of improving the human condition, the betterment of human society. By studying all these things, we'll learn how to behave better, and then we'll all be nicer, and then the world will be good, and so on. They're very sincere social workers, very sincerely working to make the world better, fools and rascals, for all their so-called sincerity. Because they're simply playing out a role. They're playing the role of being a good person. What is considered to be good within Maya. So their so-called helping others is just, they're playing out a role and bolstering other people's misconceptions also. So even much of religion, it's just, what's so-called religion, it's not for the sake of understanding the truth or for the sake of surrendering to Krishna, but it's just more paraphernalia of Maya to keep us in illusion. In many cases, quite absurd. If we go on Saturday to one of the main streets in Jerusalem, we'll find cars are driving there, which is not surprising. And there'll be many Orthodox Jews trying to stop the cars driving. Why do they do that? Because Saturday is the Jewish Sabbath, and you're not supposed to do any work on the Sabbath day. So they're trying to stop the cars driving because these other Jews, who are not so strict, are driving the cars, and they're breaking the laws of God, who says you shouldn't do any work. I don't know, what do you have to have someone to feed you, carry you to the toilet? What qualifies as work? So the idea is that as long as the Jews don't strictly follow the law, with their imaginary law, then the Messiah will not come. Just completely absurd. But they're really convinced of it. And thus they are entrapped in Maya by various customs and wrong ideas. No. Much of what goes on in the name of religion, there's no idea. Well, there may be some very a vague and distorted idea of God, but really it may be better in some ways to be religious, maybe, but it doesn't get us out of Maya. It's another facet of Maya. There's no idea of God, how to surrender to Him. It's all based on the bodily concept, the Jewish religion especially, because the idea is that you are the chosen people, you're born. If you're born a Jew, I know their idea is what happens to everyone else. or why that God likes the Jews in particular, not any. Why the, you know, what? Why does God like them? What's? If someone grows up and you don't tell him he's a Jew, he wouldn't know. So, very strange ideas. All in the bodily concept of life. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, so much he preached about the bodily concept of life. We're not the body. Because it's not just a matter of theoretically realizing that we're not the body and that we're spirit soul, but there's the bodily concept of life goes much more beyond thinking I am the body, but with it comes I'm not just this body, but this body is, for instance, Turkmenistani, so, or whatever it may be. This body is Gaelic. I don't think many people think that nowadays. Or I was born on the Isle of Man, therefore I am Manx. It's a Manx body. And so on and so on. And then, because we are Manx, we have our history, we have our culture. There's a little island in between Great Britain and Ireland. It's called the Isle of Man. And they used to have their own language, which is now lost, and anyway, it's just an example there of people who they identify that this is our way of life, this is our way of thinking, this is what we do. In Russia, there's many people think that, well, we're Russian, we're Christians, we have to support the Orthodox Church, not thinking that before the Orthodox Church came to Russia, there are many people living in Russia, and the land that's now called Russia, which wasn't called Russia at the time, and they're no idea of Christianity. In fact, even before Christ, so they didn't even have the idea that we're Russian, because the idea of a Russian nation hadn't arisen at the time, their forefathers. But now they have the idea because they're born in Russian to a Russian father with a name something like Ivanovich or something like this, that we're Russians and we have a sense of national pride and we have our own religion, and so we have our own customs and our own. In Russia, so to be a real Russian, you have to eat meat, you have to drink vodka, and speak Russian, and so on. So it's not just this identifying the body as the self, but one identifies himself with a whole set of customs, beliefs. Some of those may change, just like you might be born in a family that's been voting in America, been voting Republican ever since the Republican Party was founded. But you may change and vote Democrat. Some things you'll change, but you might even change and you might be so radical as to think. There are not many people in America who think like that, but there might be some people who think that, well, democracy's not a very good system, we should have another system. People who think like that, communists, for instance, communists are considered very bad and wrong by most people in America. So there's this whole idea, you know, democracy, it's such a great idea. Democracy is so good that it's worth going halfway around the world to bomb people who don't believe in it, so that they can also have the benefits of democracy. And then there are other people who may opt out of that and become a communist or a Nazi or something like that. There is a Nazi party in America, even today. They have maybe, I don't know, 200 members or something, maybe less. But then you adopt a whole new set of beliefs and so-called morals and values and culture, which just traps you in another, traps us all in another way, in Maya. So very deeply cast ideas of what is proper, what is real, what should be done, but it's all Maya, that's all. It's just to keep us in the consciousness of I am not the servant of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, he preached about this, about we're not the body, as long as we are identifying with the body or our land of birth or any such thing, then we're in Maya. And Srila Prabhupada, he, of course, any transcendentalist, they will note the temporality of our present situation. Everything's going to finish soon, so why be attached to it? So all this, this is all supposed to cut our attachment to all these designations that bind us in this material world by understanding that they're all temporary and therefore not real. So what about the Vedic culture? Is that also trapping us in Maya? Well, it may do. It's the actual Vedic culture is meant for liberating us from this material world and over and above that, taking us to the lotus feet of Krishna, beyond all mundane designations. So it would be a great mistake to think that the Vedic culture on the standard anthropological model is that which is based on Darwinian theory, that there were some molecules floating around which somehow or other combined themselves, and then by more and more chance combinations, we eventually ended up with human society, to make a long story short. And actually, their story is pretty short anyway, because they don't know how it goes on. So it's just some theory that some chemicals got together and said, hey, why don't we join together and become a human being? So, first of all, we have to become a cell, and then somehow or other some cells which come into being somehow or other, they somehow or other combine to make, what was the first living being, a tadpole? Or some kind of plankton or something. And then the plankton, protozoa, amoeba, and then somehow or other the amoeba, it's very difficult to imagine this, because the whole ecosystem is one of interdependence. Like amoeba get eaten by, and plankton, they get eaten by fish and like that. So anyway, the amoeba turned into a fish, and then the fish started eating the amoeba, but still the amoeba survived in the trillions. And then the fish popped his head out of the primordial soup ocean and saw there was some land and thought he'd like to visit it, and so he grew some legs, and it went on like this. So anthropology is based on evolutionary theory. That's an important word, theory. So the idea is that human culture evolved. First of all, there were apes, and then they became half men, and some of them started grunting, and then it became more sophisticated, so we ended up with Sanskrit, for instance, extremely sophisticated language, which only completely ignorant people speak, because really sophisticated people speak English. And therefore, all these cultures, they've simply evolved from Stone Age, what shall we say, prototype or forerunners of actual human culture. Now we have, we're really at the apex of evolution now. We came to the highest level. We have the English language. We have abortion clinics. We have democracy. We have feminism. And we've really made a lot of progress. So is the Vedic culture just one of those cultures? And one which, one that's actually outdated because it's no democracy or feminism or abortion clinics. No, the Vedic culture is categorically different because the Vedic culture is given by Krishna for our liberation from this material world. However, just like our consciousness, as we're attempting to be Krishna conscious, is mixed with material consciousness, so Vedic culture can mix with mundane culture. Just like, for instance, it's now considered part of Indian culture for young women, especially in North India, to wear, or especially before marriage, to wear salwar kameez. And sometimes some unenlightened headmasters send girls back from school if they're wearing jeans and t-shirts instead of a salwar kameez, which is not, however, a Vedic dress. It's Muslim dress, but it's come to be accepted as part of Vedic or Indian culture. And it is more chaste than jeans and t-shirt, no doubt, but it's not part of the original culture. So it may mix like that, and so we have, and that's going on, and more as the different world cultures impinge on the Vedic culture. And the pure Vedic culture is surrender to Krishna. Sarvadhamman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. That's the basis of it. Pure devotees, they live among each other simply for the sake of serving and glorifying Krishna with no personal desire. But there are also mixed devotees, neophyte devotees, and non-devotees within Vedic culture. So much of Vedic culture, which is ultimately aimed at Krishna, sarve vedar yat padamam ananti, all the Vedas aim at the personality of Godhead. But much of the Vedic culture, it caters to non-devotees, especially materialistic people who are interested in going to the heavenly planets by performing yajnas, for instance. So, even though the Vedic culture is different, because it's coming down from Krishna, rather than formed on the basis of human interaction without any specific, without any compass where it's supposed to be. There's no specific direction where we're supposed to be going. But the Vedic culture can also, and especially in Kali Yuga, tends to get mixed up with all wrong things and misused, such as in the caste, what we call the caste system, as it's known today, which is not Krishna's system, which he speaks about in Bhagavad Gita. Chatur Varnyang Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. Krishna said that I made these divisions in human society, four main divisions, on the basis of the qualities of a person and his inclination to work. But the caste system is rigidly based on birth. So the difference between Vedic culture and mundane culture may not be apparent if the Vedic culture itself is quite mundane. It's mundane culture works on the principle of the tension between cooperation and exploitation. Everyone wants to exploit everyone else for sense gratification, but some level of cooperation is needed because humans need to live with others, and we derive pleasure from others. We need others to help us fulfill our own desires, and so some level of cooperation is needed. But ultimately, everyone wants themselves to be the best. And so their laws and morality, they're all based on the principle of on what is considered a a proper society, according to the definition given by secular leaders in most of the world, including here in India, we're influenced by ideas coming from Western Europe and America. So the idea is to allow people as much freedom as possible to pursue whatever they want to pursue, while not allowing them to harm others. Where does the bar come? I mean, what is considered acceptable and what is not acceptable? If that is the principle, but there's no ultimate principle, there's no knowledge of the goal of life, and therefore, for instance, abortion becomes allowable, and cow slaughter becomes allowable, because only humans are considered important, and fetuses are not considered humans, and so it's considered moral and proper to allow abortion and cow slaughter. And because the aim of life is to allow people to be as happy as possible without harming each other, then what's wrong, for instance, with divorce? Because two people don't like each other, then better they split up. So all kinds of wrong ideas come because the whole culture is simply based on sense gratification without any knowledge of the actual goal of life or who we are or what we're supposed to be doing or how we can actually be happy. Srila Prabhupada, he made many social comments. One of them he commented was that he spoke of the old men who don't like to give up their posts. There's again another symptom of the bodily concept of life. That thinking, the whole aim of society is to get on top. Not everyone is so ambitious. Some people are content to, or they accept that, well, I'm only going to be a factory worker, or I'm only going to be a middle-level manager. But then in their dreams, they may be dreaming, I became the head of the state, or I became the world boxing champion, or I became Miss World, or something like this. So everyone wants to get on top, and when someone gets on top, they don't want to give it up. That's what Srila Prabhupada said, the old politicians, they should stand aside and let the young people come in. And the old people should retire for spiritual realization, but they don't want to. And Srila Prabhupada gave the example of Mahatma Gandhi. He was campaigning for independence. He got independence, but still he wanted to be involved in politics. No one was listening to him. He wasn't happy. And eventually, as Srila Prabhupada predicted, he died ingloriously. That is the word that Srila Prabhupada wrote in a letter to Mahatma Gandhi, that you will have to die ingloriously unless you leave this politics. So again, it's coming from the bodily concept of life, and from that comes the idea I should be better, I should dominate. It's all imitation of God, that's all. Ishvaro ham aham bhogi, siddho ham balavan sukhi. It's all this completely bizarre and impossible idea that we shall become God, either by becoming a great enjoyer of this world, or when one becomes frustrated in that, then one tries to be liberated and imagines that you've merged into God and you're equal to God. So the karmi and the jnani, or the person who wants to enjoy this world and the person who wants to renounce it, they're both of the same consciousness, actually. It's all the idea of trying to be God. And this, to be a leader in human society, is another contamination. Of course, there have to be leaders, and Krishna himself speaks in Bhagavad Gita about brahmanas and kshatriyas, who are the brahmanas are the spiritual, intellectual, and moral leaders of human society. The kshatriyas are the administrative leaders who must, of course, also be moral leaders to some extent. So if that is done in a spirit of service to Krishna, that's all very good. If it's not, then it becomes a contamination. Just like Duryodhana, from the citizen's point of view, in terms of his administration, he was probably just as good as Yudhishthira. From the citizen's point of view, apart from the fact that they probably all liked Yudhishthira better, but in terms of taxing and providing public services, protection for the citizens, utilities, Duryodhana was probably, we don't have much record of that, we don't have any record of anything else, of him being mistreating the citizens or persecuting them. He was only persecuting the Pandavas. So they were probably just as good in many ways, but there was a complete difference in the attitude. Yudhishthira wanted to be the king for the sake of dharma, and Duryodhana just wanted to be the king for the sake of his own fat ego. That's all. So that was the difference. And Yudhishthira was godly, and Duryodhana was not godly. Even though Duryodhana, when he was dying, he said, "You see, I performed many yajnas, I gave charity to brahmanas," and he was recounting all his pious deeds. But even that was done in the consciousness of wanting to show himself to be a good king and showing off to others. There was no humility whatsoever. Just everything he did, even the pious activities, was simply to water his egoism. That's all. So this false egoism of thinking, "I am the body, I am the best. If I'm not the best, I'd like to be the best." This is all coming from this bodily concept of life. And then Maya supplies us all kinds of facilities and association by which we can feel comfortable. We feel yes, this is the way things should be. In a wrong kind of society. So that about leadership, that attitude. Whereas the Vaishnava attitude is to feel oneself more humble than a blade of grass. And that only means not feeling oneself, but one should not try to promote oneself to be more than a blade of grass. Of course, some leadership is required in Vaishnav society, but it's quite possible within Vaishnav society to also become attached to the paraphernalia and the cultural trappings, and to take that to be the essence. Just like we might have a big temple, and we build a big temple, and we're very proud. I have such a big building. But it's not our building, it's Krishna's building. Or one may have a post and be attached to that post and not want to leave it, even though one may not be very competent to fulfill the task as the, what is that? Is it Murphy's Law or Parkinson's Law? That in the corporate world, people rise to their level of incompetence. Is it Parkinson's Law or Murphy? It's either Parkinson or Murphy, one of them. It's an old one. This goes back a long time. The idea is that someone who's doing well gets promoted.
Yeah,
and he does well in his post, and he keeps on getting promoted till he comes to a position which he's not capable of, and then he doesn't get promoted anymore. So you rise to your level of incompetence. So that may be there in Vaishnav society also. I mean, there was a very sad case of one of the greatest book distributors in the history of ISKCON, who after years of traveling in a Sankirtan van and distributing many thousands of books, was overnight made a GBC and guru, and he had no idea what he should be doing, and actually made a complete mess of his whole GBC zone and of his own life. So he didn't rise to his level of incompetence, he was just booted into it with no preparation and no training, anything like that. So even in Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't be attached to any position. There's this idea in Krishna consciousness that not in actual Krishna consciousness, but in what we consider to be Krishna consciousness, that someone must be better because they're in a higher position. Recently I was talking to a devotee who's been in the movement quite a long time. He's a temple president. He's a disciple of one of my god brothers. And he was speaking to me and very sincerely expressing that he said, I want to know your opinion because, you know, you're on a higher level. And I said, higher level? Yeah, okay, I'm a sannyasi and you're a householder. But Krishna doesn't see that. When you go back to the spiritual world, it's not, oh, he's a sannyasi, okay, he's a gopi. And this one, he was just a pot cleaner, okay, so he has to be a blade of grass. It's not like that. What position we hold here within the Vaishnav society, of course, sannyasis should be respected, temple presidents should be respected, and actually all Vaishnavas should be respected, but generally speaking, as is required for the administration of an organization, those who are in recognized posts, they have some special respect that's required. Otherwise, how can they administer? But Krishna doesn't see that. He sees what is your position. He sees what's in our heart. And do we actually love him? Or this becoming attached to some position, I have to remain in my post. We may have some idea, it's good for the society, but I don't know, it's like maybe some leaders could recognize their own, that they've risen to their level of incompetence, it should maybe go down one level or whatever. But if instead of the mission we're more attached to our position, that means we're not really doing the mission a very good service. But it's identifying myself and my being with something which is intrinsically not me. Just like someone thinks, I'm English. Wave the Union Jack. Sing God Save the Queen. Eat fish and chips. Well, that was one generation ago. I guess that's out of date now. I'm the Sankirtan party leader, or I'm the GBC, I'm the guru. Guru is supposed to be a transcendental position, but if one identifies with that more than of being a servant of Krishna, then Maya, because we don't find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught, we do find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Jivesu Rupoi Krishna Nityodas Gopi Bhatur Pada Kamalayo Dasu Dasanu Das. He doesn't say Jivesu Rupoi Krishna Nityodas, where there are gradations in there, that the sannyasi is better than the grihastha, or the temple president is better than the new bhakta. In some ways, yes, but in ultimate spiritual terms, not at all. So, while forming an organization called ISKCON, we have to be careful that the traditions, the customs, they're understood and practiced for the sake of fostering Krishna consciousness. Lokiki vaidiki chaiva. What's that verse? Anyway, the purport of this verse, which I'm just remembering the first of, line of, is that all customs, rituals, whether they're lokic, which means conventional, or vaidiki, whether they're vaidic, it's all meant to be done for the pleasure of Krishna. Otherwise, it becomes what people call empty rituals. So this striking statement, Maya provides family tradition, our family tradition. That may be a good thing also, family, just like we see when Parikshit was born, Yudhishthira and the other Pandavas, they had his horoscope made up and interpreted, because they wanted to see, would he maintain the family tradition? But their family tradition is upholding the Kshatriya Dharma, protecting the citizens, and specifically serving Krishna. So that family tradition is good. But if the family tradition is just some coat of arms, but dominating over others, then it's all meaningless. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Yeah. If one is identifying oneself as a member of ISKCON Maya, I believe it was George Harrison who asked Srila Prabhupada about this similar question. He said, as George Harrison asked Srila Prabhupada, as the organization grows, it might be that devotees become more absorbed in I can't remember exactly how he put it, in management, and it may become material. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, because it's Krishna's organization, it's for Krishna. Then as long as we keep Krishna in the center, then management for Krishna is spiritual. But that I also recall, that Srila Prabhupada, he so much stressed that leaders and all devotees, they rise early, attend temple programs, read the books and all, so that they actually apply themselves to spiritual life so they can be on the spiritual platform. Otherwise, mundane consciousness may enter. So yes, ISKCON is Krishna's organization as much as we give ourselves and our activities to him. But even if ISKCON is fully spiritual, we may see it as mundane. Just like Duryodhana saw Krishna as another mundane person, and he wanted to use Krishna for his own schemes. So ISKCON may be fully spiritual if the members of ISKCON are fully dedicated to Krishna. But even then, anyone can enter within or from without, take it in a mundane way. And yeyata amang prabhadyante tangs to taiva bhajamyaham. Srila Prabhupada said about one of his godbrothers that he got the mercy of our Guru Maharaj in that he got the buildings and the property and the position and the name, and I got the mercy of my Guru Maharaj by being able to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So, having a big position and being in charge of various properties, if we're not in the right consciousness, that may simply be Maya's way of cheating us, that's all.
Some young people, they are not enthusiastic to take up the position and leadership role, like in politics. So many old people are there because young people are not enthusiastic. So even though old people, if they come out,
You're saying that old people are in politics because the young people are not enthusiastic to take it up. Well, maybe the young people are not enthusiastic to take it up because they just presume that the old people, it's a job for old people, because they didn't say anything else. And the old people, they won't let the young one, they make systems by which you have to be in the party for 40 years or something before you can take a major role or something like this. The whole thing is there should be training. I mean, you can say put young people in, but they have to be trained also. Not just because someone's young that they're qualified to be a leader, they have to be trained for that. There's no training at any level of society. All the training is the same in the schools. People are going to have different occupations. Someone's going to be a train driver, someone's going to be a politician, someone's going to be a doctor, someone's going to be an engineer, but for the basic training for everyone is the same. Isn't that ridiculous? I mean, when people are in their life, they're going to be doing completely different things, but they all have the same training for the first 12 years or so. And if you're going to, for instance, make go arka, distilled cow urine, what do you need to go to school for 12 years for anyway? You can learn that in a couple of days and do it for the rest of your life. Why to spend 12 years at school or whatever they have you? It's ridiculous, the whole society is completely insane. This school, as far as I can see, apart from turning out a few what they call more qualified people, the main aim is just to brainwash everyone and get them in total shudra consciousness whereby they can all be manipulated and exploited. That's why they have in India, they're talking about RTE, right to education. That means in the name of benefiting the individuals and the nation, whatever that means, benefiting the nation. Benefiting the nation, what does that mean? That means benefiting the Tatas and the Hindujas and all these people. And the politicians who get a payback from all these people. But they force the kids to go to school and then they brainwash them according to their own programs. And then after that they say you have freedom of speech, but they have no freedom of thought because they've already been brainwashed in various ways. More and more youngsters want to get into politics. Yeah, it's a quick way to make lots of money without doing any, and power without any work.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Someone told me that they'd heard some parents were saying they're no use to send your kids to school and no need to send them to university, just put them into politics as soon as possible. What do you have to... only the stupid people, they work and they do jobs, and other people, they get into politics and they just take all the money that all the other people are earning. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.